Sasha Lilly is a writer, editor, and radio broadcaster. She co-founded and hosted the critically acclaimed program of Radical Ideas Against the Grain. She is a series editor of PM Press's political economy imprint, Spectre, and she is the editor of a new book from this imprint, Capital and Its Discontents, Conversations with Radical Thinkers in a Time of Tumult. Hello, Sasha, and thank you for taking the time to talk with CKUT's Words program.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Really glad to be with you.
So we'll start off with some really general questions about the imprint and about the publishing company. PM Press focuses on radical and stimulating fiction and nonfiction. When did PM Press create a series focusing specifically on the political economy?
Well, following the global economic meltdown, it seemed really important to be able to put out penetrating radical ideas to try and get a handle on the nature of the crisis, but really beyond that, the nature of capitalism, the nature of imperialism. And that seemed to be lacking. So through PM Press, I had the opportunity to start this imprint, this series called Spectre. And it has published 4 books so far, which attempt to do exactly that. The first one, actually, both the first 2 books in the series were actually written by Canadians. Perhaps familiar to your listeners, Leo Panitch, Sam Gindin, and Greg Albo co-authored In and Out of Crisis, and David McNally is the author of Global Slump. And both of those books take sort of different looks at understanding the global economic meltdown, but in the context of capitalism and the context of neoliberalism. And so, and then, as you mentioned, my book, Capital and Its Discontents, is also part of the series. And then there's a 4th book that came out, which is part of an attempt to dust off earlier works of radical literature that might be relevant today. So it's actually a book by the wonderful British historian E.P. Thompson, famous for his book, The Making of the English Working Class, about the utopian socialist and artist William Morris, and about his ideas with, again, the idea that in a moment like this, when radical analysis and radical ideas are needed, we should be looking in all different places for some of the best ones.
So the next question I have is more to do with the book that was just published and its content. It's a bit of a two-part question. You state at the beginning of the book that this is not a book of prescriptions. Rather, it brings together crucial perspectives for understanding capitalism and the world we inhabit. And I was just wondering your view on if our misunderstanding of the world we inhabit is a threat in efforts to create progressive change. And then also, in a world that is defined increasingly right now with the internet, how can we ensure that people will engage or encourage people to engage in a dialogue with these crucial perspectives? Or to phrase that same question a different way, how do progressives shape thought, shape their thoughts, language, and arguments in order to hook the attention of people with their who already have their minds made up?
Well, both good questions. To tackle the first one, yes, the book is not an attempt to say, here are all the answers. You know, there's enough of that, I think, historically on the left. Instead, the book is an attempt to try and present analysis to understand, well, really to understand capitalism and the way that it shapes our lives in a tremendous number of ways, and then in some ways allow people to come to some of their own conclusions about then what to do. But I absolutely would say yes, that having sort of misreading, perhaps, the kinds of threats that we're up against definitely can have a bad effect on the kind of actions that we choose to take. If we locate the problem for example, if we think that what we're dealing with is something that can effectively be reformed, then obviously we would follow different kinds of activism and action. If the problem itself is capitalism, which is, of course, what I'm arguing, then what it it leads to is a need to try and think about how to transcend the system and how to create a new something to replace it, which I think is I mean, clearly we are challenged now already by even thinking about how to get beyond capitalism. And then the question of what kind of world we'd like to live in is also really serious. But I think getting an understanding particularly of neoliberalism, the system, the kind of form that capitalism has taken for the last almost 40 years, is really important and can influence our activism in different ways. To your second question about how to, in a really polarized world when people have made up their minds about politics, how do we actually reach people? Well, I think it's a challenge. As you say, I don't think the internet can be a fantastic tool, but it's a limited one. And clearly a lot of people end up going to sites, for example, where they know they're going to find ideas which they already agree with. So I do think a lot of engagement, activism, and kind of activism around ideas needs to take place outside of the internet, and that people need to do what I think has become much harder, which is to go out and talk to people who they don't agree with, or find people who might not encounter these ideas. And I think it's fantastic to have, say, left-wing radio as one medium where people can stumble upon it and find something which they didn't expect. But it's much harder than that. The challenge is much more formidable, I think, that, you know, it really behooves all of us who believe in social change to try and actually go to places where non-like-minded people might be and talk to them.
You mentioned in your first answer what the solution to the problem is. Is it reform or is it itself capitalism? And one of the common criticisms of the left, people often ask, well, what do you propose as an alternative? And I sort of have a very optimistic view that I believe change sort of involves, I might have like an opposite view of you. I think people like change involves creating relationships with people, with academics, with wealthy philanthropists, with business, changing their minds. I just wanted to, I guess, get your opinion on, in the States recently, Obama has sought to put through the $1 million tax bill, I think it's called, that was also supported by a wealthy philanthropist, Warren Buffett. And I'm wondering if you think this is all just gesture, this sort of movements, or if you think what's happening there is a positive change that might replicate itself in the future.
I think that, I wouldn't say it's a gesture. I think what's going on here is that when the meltdown hit in 2008, the system, you know, really teetered on the edge, and it was pulled back. But subsequently, there's been all sorts of cuts. I know that's been the case in Canada, certainly been the case in the U.S. and around the world, that the answer to the crisis was austerity, to cut public sector workers, to cut social spending, and so on. But what that's led to is that the global economy looks like it's slipping back into recession. And while I think Obama has been, and world leaders of various stripes have been in some ways really happy, or have appeared to be quite happy to sort of sacrifice the ultimate health of their economies to the ultimate aim of restructuring them so as to make them even more profitable for those who are wealthy. I think at this point, though, it's becoming politically maybe not untenable, but definitely dicey, as unemployment is over 9% in the U.S. And it's, I mean, that's, if you add in those who have stopped looking for work or those who are part-time workers and would like to be full-time workers, it's more like 16%. And everything that has been done, or so much of what has been done in terms of government policy, has actually made that recession worse, has not addressed jobs. I think this is Obama's attempt to try to address that and keep the economy from going into recession again. But the scale of it is probably not going to be big enough to actually avert a second recession, or so it appears. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball,
right.
But even the IMF this week warned that unless something pretty drastic is done, the United States and the European Union will be in recession by next year.
Do you think the bill will go through the Senate, where it's mostly Republican?
No, I mean, I think the predictions are that it would be gutted in kind of its transit. I mean, I think the thing the Republicans would most focus on, ironically, they're calling it class war, which is very interesting because it does appear a class war is going on, but it's a class war from above, certainly not from below. But the aspects of the bill which would repeal the Bush-era tax cuts, that seems almost certainly to be challenged by the Republicans. And, of course, you know, there's all this talk about debt and deficit and the need to cut, but the main contributor to the deficit over the past decade actually was these Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthy.
I've heard other people quote statistics where they're saying whenever the U.S. was its most profitable, I guess, or had the least amount of deficit was whenever they had the highest, whenever businesses were paying higher taxes, essentially. So it doesn't make any sense, really.
Sure. And then military spending is a huge part of it as well. An enormous part of the debt is actually from, you know, the U.S. occupying various countries and having bases around the world.
What's interesting is that often this military occupation is used to sustain a way of life that one could say is created by a capitalist system. Do you think that with the economic crisis that has happened in recent years and is still happening now, that we're at a tipping point where the governments might be forced to reconsider this sort of engagement with other countries?
Well, I would hope that it was the case, but I don't think it will happen unless there really is organized pressure from below on some widespread basis, because at the same time that governments are taking on this debt, that part of the debt is untouchable. I mean, you know, when people rail against debts, they're not talking about the military at all. And, you know, so much of politics is about nationalism and the kind of posturing that entails. So I think it's really crucial that there actually are movements around this. And when governments say we need to cut, that people organize themselves and say, no, you need to cut the military. That's what you need to cut. Not social spending, not social provision. And I also think, just as an aside, that it's really important that those of us who care about the terrible crisis of nature also organize against the military on an environmental level, because a huge amount of carbon emissions are actually from the military.